Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. This week is part two of my talk with recording engineer and artist and baker, Randall Michael Tobin. First of all, Warner Music is trying to buy France-based Believe Music for a reported $1.8 billion. Now, that's normally not that big a deal, since major labels buy smaller labels all the time, except for the fact that Believe also owns TuneCore, which is the DIY distributor for many indie artists and labels. Believe also owns record labels Nuclear Blast, Naive Groove Attack, Play 2, and All Points, and has offices all over the world. As you could imagine, indie artists and their associations are beginning to push back. The UK Association of Independent Music issued a statement that said, "The potential acquisition of Believe by Warner Music is gravely concerning. This would play into an aggressive and worrying trend of major label groups buying up independent labels and distributors, further consolidating the global recordings market and damaging the health of the independent sector." Of course, this is all true. The reason why Warner's wants this acquisition is because that all the major labels are losing market share to indies. The fact of the matter is that most indie artists don't see a point in signing with a major label, since every service they provide is now easily attainable from third parties these days, and even directly from the major labels themselves. And the fact of the matter is that the majors really don't want developing artists either, since they haven't been willing to participate in artist development for years now. They prefer to wait until you have some success with a proven audience. Of course, once that happens, why would you even want to consider a label at that point? If this deal goes through, it will make indie artists think long and hard about using TuneCore going forward. Things are bound to change being under a big corporate umbrella, and that's usually not in favor of the artist. One has to wonder if TuneCore becomes part of Warner Music, if the other indie distributors will be able to take up the slack. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. Also, I'm pleased to announce that my new Musicians AI Handbook is now available. It's packed with information about how AI can help you with new song, lyric, mixing, and mastering ideas, as well as music marketing to help you get your music out to the audience that you deserve. To get your copy, go to bobbyosinski.com/AI Handbook. That's bobbyosinski.com/AI Handbook. You can also find it on Amazon and Apple Books. If you're into real synthesizer hardware, then you probably will be interested in this. A company called Wood & Fire Studio used the SEO tool SEMrush and Google Trends to come up with the most popular synthesizers by country. What they found is some things that are really obvious and some things that are not. For instance, Roland is especially popular in Japan, which isn't too surprising since the company's based there. And it's also very popular in Asia in general, which, again, is not too surprising. What is surprising is that it's so popular in Africa and in Canada. The same goes for Behringer, which is especially popular in Germany, again, not too surprising since that's where it comes from. But it's also very popular in Southern and Eastern Europe. However, the popularity of Behringer in Spanish-speaking countries is really amazing. Behringer is number one in Spain, and also in almost all South American countries. It dominates in populous countries like Mexico, Argentina, and Brazil. A real surprise is Arturia, which is the most popular brand in its home market of France. And it's also really successful in the UK. In the United States, the popularity is dominated by Moog. And although these synthesizers are really expensive as compared to the other brands, they're really popular in the US, and that's kind of what everyone wants. Moog is also really popular in Lithuania. Why? Well, that's because Clara Rockmore is the most famous theremin player in the world, and she comes from Lithuania. So Moog is the biggest theremin manufacturer in the world, and therefore a lot of people in Lithuania really like Moog as a result. One of the things that the study also looked at was the number of searches for particular synthesizers per month. Roland is in first place with a total of about 173,000 searches per month. And in the grand scheme of things, that's not really all that much. Overall, Roland is ranked number one in 73 out of 118 countries in terms of searches per month. Behringer is in second place with about 132,000 searches per month and is number one in 33 out of 118 countries. Arturia again is a surprise as it sits in third place with about 100,000 searches per month. That said, it's only ranked number one in 6 out of 118 countries. Moog is in fourth place with about 88,000 searches per month. This may not seem like a lot, it really isn't, but it does dominate the US market, and it ranks as the most popular synthesizer search in 3 out of 118 countries. In fifth place is Korg, and way, way down the list is Oberheim, who would have thought, at about 3,900 queries per month. Like most music hardware, real synthesizer popularity is winding down, but they're not dead yet. The study shows that one of the major determining factors in which one you're going to buy is the country that you live in. This week I speak with Randall Michael Tobin in part two of our conversation. Randall founded his Theta Sound Studio way back in 1977 and has worked on thousands of projects in various genres including jazz, pop, R&B, classical, hip-hop, country, ragtime, gospel, ballet, alternative, film score, and spoken word. Besides offering just about every audio service you can think of, he also offers art and graphics, online marketing and promotion, video production and editing, and website design and maintenance. But, as I said last week, there's more to Randall's story than just audio. His interest in artisan cooking led him to baking sourdough bread loaves that he gave to clients and friends as gifts. This eventually led to a side business called Random Acts of Breadness, where, as an artisan baker, Randall sells sourdough bread along with raw farm butters, honey spreads, jams, and organic extra virgin olive oil. And, as I also said last week, I eat at least one piece of Randall's most delicious sourdough just about every day. During part two of our interview, we spoke about how some house concerts started a side career in cooking and baking, the similarities between food and music, using guerrilla marketing to start his bakery, the importance of pivoting when opportunities present themselves, and much more. I spoke with Randall from his studio in Burbank, California. Through all this, you've gone through audio, you've gone through graphics, you've gone through video, you've gone through web design, and then you become an artisan baker.
Yeah, well, there's a little in between. The way stop on that is the house concerts that we did at the studio. Because the house concerts introduced the concept of integrating food with the show. And some of my house concert people said, let's have, you know, we're going to have a little food for our guests at intermission or whatever, you know? So they hired me to cook some stuff up. And around 2016, which is after I had started the house concerts in 2014, I started making sourdough bread. And that just became one of these random things. November 2016, I wonder if I can make sourdough bread. And after making it and going through all the failures and stuff that led up to finally coming up with something decent, and giving it away for Christmas and having my friends and family go crazy over the bread, people started getting excited because I just kept giving the bread away. And then I started making pizza, sourdough pizza. And that was the turning point. Because then my friend Dave, who was one of my bread clients or bread giftees, who's on my wall at the bakery, I made pizza for him and he took a bite of the pizza. He goes, dude, you got to open a restaurant. That was the push. And yeah, and he even said that he would help. And I knew that he was financially well off enough because he owns a foundation repair company. He's one of the biggest in California. And then he has his art. But his foundation repair company helps fund his art game.
Wow.
Called California Locos, which is a great consortium of five old school artists from like Highland Park and East LA. And they have this whole little edgy thing. And Jonathan Hemmersfeld is one of those people. And he did iconic posters of Jimi Hendrix and The Endless Summer. And so he's well connected in that world. But Dave had a heart attack in 2017 when he was setting up an art show in Chinatown. And I went to that art show. And when I found out he had a heart attack, I was like, whoa. But when he survived and he found Dr. Gundry's book, The Plant Paradox, which is on my counter at the bakery. And he told me about the book. And I'm going, I gotta check this out. So I'm reading the book. And it's like, well, if I want to try this guy's program, I have to stop making bread because grains are not allowed except for millet and sorghum. And it's like, I'm not going to make bread with millet and sorghum. But I kept reading the book. Because on page 50 and 51 of the book, he says, now you can go to Europe, and this is how they make the bread, and it's okay. And I was like, really? He explained exactly how we were making our bread. From the type of flour, the process, the starter, no chemicals, everything, no brand, no germ. It's like, I don't have to stop making the bread to do his program. Yes! I mean, it was like, if Gundry hadn't written that in the book, I would have been like torn between, do I stop giving away bread that has brought so much joy to people and myself? Or do I just keep doing it and knowing that I'm doing something that's harmful? Or I get Gundry's blessing that it's actually okay because this is the way they make the bread. And if you make it this way, it's actually good for you instead of bad for you. So I was buoyed by that little bit of the book. And then I became a plant paradox chef. And it's basically, there's a list of foods that are like, these are the okay foods and these are the not okay foods. And some of the not okay foods can be made okay if you process them a certain way. But for the most part, just try and avoid this and just do that. So I found it kind of like, say I was writing a symphony for an orchestra. Well, we can't have any trombones or French horns or piccolos in this orchestra. So we're going to have to use other instruments to take their place. It's the same way with his program. It's like, okay, I can't use this, this, and this, but I can use this and this. Let's see if I can make Thai food. Let's see if I can make Indian food. Let's see if I can make Italian food. And just like music, I just found myself loving this exploration of new food ideas. And then I tested it out on people. The first event I ever did, I actually charged people $60 a ticket for. It was a 7-course Italian dinner. It was all Plant Paradox friendly. It was in my backyard. And we sold out in a week.
Wow.
And I hired a sous chef. I hired a waitress. My wife helped. I worked for a week prepping this whole thing. I just dove in. I never had any chef training, right? I'm just going like, okay, this is what you have to do. And at the end of the event, people were just floored. They were like, oh my God, I can't believe how good I feel after eating all this food. Because I didn't put anything bad in it. It was all Plant Paradox friendly. And then I'm going, so Dr. Gundry's right. If you don't put the toxic lectin foods into the menu and you use the ones that are neutral, well, the body's figured out how to process the lectins, you can actually make great food that people can eat a lot of and they won't get sleepy or they won't feel like, oh my God, I feel so. That was the big aha moment for Plant Paradox. So I'm going, okay, great. We're going to open a restaurant, like Dave said, you know?
Yeah.
And the only problem is that, you know, when COVID came, nobody's opening a restaurant.
Yeah.
I was moving in that direction. And even went so far as I actually live about 200 feet from a cafe on the corner of Riverside Drive and Mariposa called Base Camp Station. It's between the Equestrian Center and Disney, closer to the Equestrian Center.
Okay.
It's a little cafe. It used to be called the Riverside Cafe for 15
years. Yeah, yeah, I know.
And then it became something else for a couple of years, and then it was taken over by the guy who started Republic of Pie in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
A guy named John Stocking. So he took it over and turned it into a whole other thing, a lunch and breakfast place. And I went over and gave him some bread. And I said, hey, I have an idea. I want to do a pop-up at your restaurant on a Saturday night. And I'll pay one of your baristas to do coffee and tea. And I'll do all the food at my house. And I'll just roll it over, right? And I'll pay you for your use of your space. And after I gave him the whole long pitch, he said, hey, that's a great idea. And I said, great, this is about November 2019. I said, okay, I'm going out of the country on a project for a few months. And when I come back, we'll pick it up where we left off. I go out of the country. COVID happens. I finally get back from where I was because the airport was closed where I was in Aruba, of all places. They finally opened it for an emergency flight to get Americans out back to the mainland. And I come home and he's closed. His restaurant's closed. Everybody's closed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And when he finally was able to reopen, of course, it was outdoor seating only. And then the idea of somebody else coming in and doing something in your restaurant is like, well, not with COVID, you know, it's like, so that idea never went anywhere. So, and you couldn't even find flour, by the way, because everybody started making sourdough bread. And all the flour was gone from every shelf in every store. And I use organic flour. That's even harder to find, right? Fortunately, before I went out of town, I had froze about 25 pounds of flour, 5 bags of flour. It was just enough to keep my starter alive while I was gone. My wife kept the starter alive. But it was months before we could find flour. And then finally, when we did find flour, I got a chest freezer and I started stocking up because I'm going, I can't be caught flat-footed. And then I was still interested in doing this restaurant cafe idea, but I had no idea when it was going to happen. And when I checked out real estate prices for food retail anywhere in Los Angeles, the prices were outrageous. Like the Fuddruckers in downtown Burbank that went on the market for $50,000 a month when it closed 5 years ago. And I'm going, well, I know it's a big space and I would never need a space that big. But to put it in perspective, if I had a place one-fifth that size, it would cost me at least $10,000 a month. So I'm going, how am I ever going to open up any kind of a space at that rate, you know? But I didn't want to do home kitchen, cottage industry, farmer's market. That's the other option, right?
Yeah.
Because there's all these restrictions on what you can and can't do, including a monetary cap. Like they limit you to $50,000 a year max, gross, that you can make. So I just said, well, I've got my studio. I never closed. When I came back, people were glad I was still open. It was considered a necessary endeavor. So all the studios were still open and my studio was, and people were glad to find me. But it wasn't until my friend Mark called me in February of 2021 and told me about the place where we're at now, that the gal at Quesnel was closing her business, that I actually had a place that might work. And 2 miles from my house, and the rent was under $2,000 a month. The Bread Angels led me there. You know, once I decided, okay, we're going to give it a shot, the Bread Angels took over. And that's what I call it. I mean, that, what else can I say? You know, when the health department came to do their first inspection, just like we had approval before the person left, they said, as far as I'm concerned, you could open tomorrow. It's like unheard of. A new restaurant in an old space usually takes months to get approval. The Bread Angels, they did it. And then we opened our grand opening day. We sold out in 2 hours, right? I mean,
I went through that. Again, the parallels. So I owned a restaurant in Los Feliz. And it was a combination California cuisine sushi restaurant. We were on national television 5 times in the first 6 months. So, and we had all sorts of wonderful celebrity clients and everything. But it took about 6 months to get the approval to open up. And it was such that they would come in and they would measure the grout between the tiles. And we didn't get the license once because the grout was too deep. And it was stuff like that. And it got to the point where it's like, okay, I think I have to pay somebody off, but who is that and how do I do it? If you've never done that before, it's like, well, how does this work?
What was the name of your restaurant?
Asia, it was called. It was in Atwater Village.
Okay.
Yeah.
I lived in Los Feliz for 8 years.
Ah, okay.
Well, too bad I didn't get to try your restaurant, darn it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Breadness. So the way I found out about you guys, it was a postcard in the mail. And again, due to your graphics capabilities, it was great. It pulled me right in. And then after I bought the first one, I was hooked, you know, forever. And also then getting your emails, which are skillfully crafted, make me want to read. And also the website, again, very skillfully crafted. So well done on all that. But the big thing is the bread. Bread is just fantastic. And now you've expanded as well. So you now have an expanded product line just beyond that.
It's like an orchestra to me. It's like I'm playing this. I never went into this as like, oh, I'm going to make money. Money was never the basis of this. Now, my original concept 2 years before we opened the bakery was that sign that you see mounted on my slicer. At the bottom, it says Artisan Sourdough Bakery, Longevity Cafe, and Legendary Bread Gifts. So just with that idea, I went to a little house event ran by a gal named Janice Bunch in Lake Balboa. And she had a little thing that she set up where she invited friends and artisans and vendors to come to her house and have a little booth. And then people would come in the neighborhood and they would check out stuff. And I brought my little random act of breadness thing, and I made a pot of chicken pot pie filling, and I had sourdough bread. And it was just free. You know, I was just giving it out but for getting the free taste, I wanted their email address and their name so that I could start my mailing list, right? And I had just built this website as a concept. I didn't have a bakery, I just had the concept. So I had the little email opt-in thing all set up, and I'd give the people the stuff and they would enter it in. And I started October 2019, the beginning of my mailing list. And people were loving the food. And this gal wanted me to come back year after year. And by that time, it was like, I was just too busy. I couldn't do it. So I originally wanted to do this cafe thing. I wanted to have like a stock pot of the day, an organic salad, sourdough bread, maybe some pizza. You know, people would buy pizza by the slice or whatever. I thought it would be a pretty cool idea. And what we ended up getting was we can do bread and we can do bread gifts, but we can't do a cafe because that space just wasn't set up for that. So I said, all right, well, let's see how we do with just the bread and the bread gifts. And we'll see how that goes. So it was February 2021 when I found out about the place, and it was March when I said, okay, let's do it. And it was August, or end of June, we had a soft launch of just one weekend. It was a preview weekend. And then we actually opened them the first weekend of August. All the while, I was little by little turning this place that had really nothing in it because the previous owner sold all her equipment to a restaurateur in Newport Beach. And so one by one, I just started bringing in stuff. I mean, the only reason why I had any money to do that was because somebody told me I should get an SBA loan when COVID came. They said, you should get an SBA disaster loan. And I'm going, well, what's a disaster? I have a recording studio. Nothing's changed here. You know, they're going like, well, you should just get the money. We don't know what's going to happen. So I applied for the money, and the first offer that came back was, okay, we can give you up to $50,000. So I said, okay, I'll take it. I'll put it aside, and I'll use that for my bakery whenever that comes, right?
Yeah.
So I set $50,000 aside, and when the opportunity came, I was like, okay, I've got some money, and I priced out equipment and stuff like that. I think I can outfit this bakery for about $40,000. So I did. I bought bargain basement stuff that's designed to last for 2 years and then break. You know, instead of paying for like top name equipment that's supposed to last forever, but cost 10 times as much. And I figured, you know, if this thing goes a year, I'll be doing good, right? You know, and I started the refrigerator, it was whatever, mixer. And there's all the drama that goes with that. My blog has all the drama that happened with the refrigerator, the mixer, and all these other things. Yeah. But here we are 2.5 years in and, you know, everything's working. I mean, things have broken, but they've gotten fixed, but everything's working at the moment. And we have just the basic products of the bread, the butter, and the honey. And that was the only stuff that I started with. And then I made the promo cards, and my wife and I walked around the neighborhood, and we, by ourselves, put them up under people's doormats. You know, just a little bit under the doormat so they could see the card, just enough so it wouldn't blow away.
Yeah.
And we put these invitations on everybody's door with the talking bread. You are invited to blah, blah, blah. And we just walked around the neighborhood, and then nextdoor.com, somebody posted something about, hey, there's a bread shop opening up. The buzz started, you know?
Yeah.
I never even heard of nextdoor.com, you know, but people are starting to talk about this bread store. And then somebody told me about Facebook's Burbank Restaurant Support Group. I'm going, is there a Burbank Restaurant Support Group on Facebook? Are you kidding? And I type in it, there it is. And it's these people that are all trying to keep local restaurants going throughout the COVID, right?
Yeah.
And they're talking about bread, my shop that's going to be opening up. I'm like, wow, okay. So when we actually opened up in August, you know, we sold out in 2 hours. And the next day we sold the next shift of bread out in an hour and a half, and we had a waiting list for the next week. So I was like, okay, I guess the bread's as good as my friends and family say it is. So let's just keep going. And at the time, it was just me, my wife, and one gal who was a real big fan of my bread, and she was my first staff person. So my first employees, and we were working our butts off. And then little by little, well, I found a Plant Paradox Facebook support group. And I typed, after we were open, hey, we're making Plant Paradox friendly bread from Dr. Gundry's book, Plant Pages 50 and 51. And the next day I had over 140 people commenting, asking, do you ship the bread? Do you ship? And five of these people from outside the United States. And I'm like, I wasn't even thinking about shipping. You know, it's like, what? So I wrote them all back and I said, we're not shipping right now, but I'm working on it. You know, and I answered everybody's comment. And out of that group, we ended up getting a few customers who are really good customers. They buy like a dozen loaves every 3 weeks.
Oh, know? Yeah, that's great.
Like one gal drives in from Arcadia, buys 12 loaves at a time and takes it back and freezes them and keeps them. And
yeah.
It's just been like that, you know? I've never had that much success in social media. I've never had that much success with music. But when I put out the bread, somebody goes, here's my money. I create music with bands and by myself and all this other stuff and trying to get people to listen to it. It's like pulling teeth. But when you have the bread, they go, "We're gonna buy this." It was just completely upside down. But I just used it to my advantage and I said, okay, if I want somebody to hear my music, I'm going to send them a loaf of bread first.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm not going to send them any music. I'm going to send them the bread. Might even be anonymously. And then they're going to go, "Where'd this come from?" And then when they reach for me, it'd be like, "Oh yeah, I just thought, you know, whatever. Oh yeah, you know, I got some music. You want to hear some of my music?" Yeah. If it's anything like your bread, you know, it's like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the bread ended up opening up way more doors than the music and all the time I spent getting good as an engineer, a producer, a writer, a composer ever did.
One of the things that I noticed the very first time that I went into your bakery by my first loaf, you were the only person there and you looked so happy doing this. I mean, you looked like you're over the moon. And really that's continued. Every time I've been in since, it's been the same thing. You just look like you're having so much fun doing what you're doing. So this is obviously not a burden to you, or at least outwardly it's not.
To me, I love what I do all around. When I'm at the studio, I'm smiling. I'm working. I love making music. When I'm at the bakery, I love it when people walk in and take that first bite of bread and their life changes before my eyes. I mean, who wouldn't want to see that? I get to see people take that first bite, just like my friends and family did. And I saw their world change. So like, they were not expecting that from that. And I just sit back, you know? We just say, "Do you like sourdough bread?" Right? "This is our organic sourdough bread. We'll give you a sample. You like butter? Great. This is our butter, blah, blah, blah." You just give it to them and you just shut up. And let them do the talking.
Yeah.
Because I'm going, I get to experience this, you know, every time we're open. I mean, it was so great on Christmas Day in 2016, and now it happens, you know, 4 days a week now. You know, I mean, who wouldn't want to have people walk into your shop and leave happier every time? Except for the people who came for bread and we were sold out and they left. And that's been happening a lot because we sold out Sunday and people came and I said, "Did you order in advance?" They go, "No, are you out of bread?" "Yeah." "Oh, no." You know, it's like, and then they leave like, and I don't want to create that effect on people, you know? But that's the problem now with the bakery is that, you know, how much bread do I make?
Well, I've learned to order it online.
Yeah, you're right. You are one of our faithful online customers.
Yeah. Last question, Randall. This has been a long, interesting journey where you've been an entrepreneur through this whole thing and entrepreneur in multiple different businesses, really, all connected, but nonetheless, what's the best piece of advice that maybe you learned along the way or somebody imparted to you?
Well, I found that whenever I've done something because I just genuinely was interested in it and I would have done it for free, that those are the things that have come back to me in the form of people paying me for services or wanting me to be involved in a project or whatever without me even asking. And the things where somebody said, "Hey, check out this multi-level opportunity for this or this or that." Even if the products were good, it never panned out because unless I was interested in it and in love with it, it never was successful. So my advice is anybody, find something you love and just do that. Now, if you're working at a job that you don't love and you can do something that you do love that might have some exchange value with society, try to work that in a little bit, a couple hours a week at first, maybe 3 hours or maybe a half a day. Half a day, I'm just going to do this. And the rest of the time, I'm going to do this job that's paying my bills, but I'm just going to do this because I love this. And if you do what you love, I mean, for me, it's worked. You know, I was doing the studio for free long before anybody paid me for it because I just love it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I've been able to, that's been a great career for me. But, you know, studios have done this big arc. And then all of a sudden, a studio like this is a whole lot less valuable than it used to be. Only those people who value a studio will still come to a studio. But otherwise, they're going to like record in their bedroom on their laptop or whatever. But I was able to pivot when certain things were going on. It was like, oh, great. I've got the graphic design stuff. Oh, if people need websites. I have like 40 websites that I have designed and managed for people, right? Most of them are music related. So I love being able to do all that. So I was like, yeah, I can do that. I used to build computers for people and set up network systems because I knew how to put computers together for graphic design programs, which was far above and beyond any word processing tasks that somebody might have needed. So I was able to pivot and get into that space for a while. But each one of these things was like, well, I like doing this. You know, I'm good at it, you know, and if people want to pay me for it, that's great. As in the studio, I make $150 an hour. I have to sell 10 loaves of bread to make $160, and then I have to pay for my labor and everything else. So what I actually net on a loaf of bread is probably not much, you know, and I haven't raised our prices since we opened, right? So that's why I've never really put attention on the money, but now I'm working with a business consultant. We're going to start figuring out exactly what is costing us to be here, because I had money from the SBA, which went beyond $50,000. They offered more money, and I took everything they offered, you know, up to $200,000. And I was able to put that completely into the business and get us to the point where we're at. Now, by opening on Thursday, we have a chance to be profitable. But labor is more than 60% of the cost of our gross. And that's like the things I never knew you had to pay for when you have employees. You know, it's not just their wages. You know, there's a few other things and a few other bills that come. It's like, where'd that come from? Okay, so I'm not compromising on quality. We still have to make the bread that we're making, and I'm not going to mass produce. But let's see if we can make this work by just being open more days and getting enough demand that we can sell maybe 500 loaves of bread a week.
Well, looks like you're getting there.
Yeah, and I certainly wouldn't mind doing that and being able to step back and have my staff do the work. And I've instilled in them my enthusiasm. We do have a couple of people that are enthusiastic, but you know, some of our employees are like, it's a job. But my wife and I are both amazing. And this one gal, Alyssa, is amazing. And Elizabeth is amazing, our newest hire. She's our social media gal as well. So we have some people on our team that are doing really good things for us, and I'm excited. And I'll never completely step away from this. I'd like to open another bakery on the East Coast because we have some demand on the East Coast, and I'd rather be able to ship from there than having to ship from here. And there's in Tampa area, there's a place where we could set up. Some of our former employees now live in the Tampa area and would love to run the bakery that I opened there. So if I can get one open there, then I'll open one there. But right now I'm here and having a great time and meeting people like you that completely blew me away. Because after reading, you're going through your website, looking at all the things that you've done, I'm going, man, this guy's done over 500 episodes with like legends.
Well, yeah. But again, this is my fourth or fifth career. And you know what that's like.
Exactly. retirement is not in my future. I'm not, you know, as long as I can do what I love, I'll be doing what I love.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You know, I've never been one to work toward retirement and sit back and, you know, do whatever people do when they retire. It seems pretty boring to me. I just love playing new games. And the fact that these games so far are working for everybody that I happen to be playing them with, I'm going to continue doing that.
Well, all I can say is the bread is fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm going to be a customer for life.
When do you taste the pizza?
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah.
I have to have a special event for that. It takes 4 days to make the dough for the pizza. It is so labor intensive. It is ridiculous. I could never sell the pizza profitably. But when you do taste the pizza, you'll understand.
You can find out more about Randall and Random Acts of Breadness at breadness.com. That's breadness, BREDNESS.com. And his Theta Sound Studios at thetasound.com. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, where you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Apple Music, Mixcloud, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Radio Public, and Podbean. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.